From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Joe Biden introduces his economic team, the latest on a potential COVID relief deal in Congress, and Attorney General Bill Barr appoints John Durham as a special counsel. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal, sitting in today for Paul Jugot. We are joined today by my colleagues, Kim Strassel. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Kyle.
And Bill McGurn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Kyle.
In an event on Tuesday, Joe Biden announced his nominees for the top economic jobs in his coming administration, calling them, quote, a first-rate team that's going to get us through this ongoing economic crisis and help us build the economy back, not just build it back, but build it back better than it was before, unquote. We mentioned on an earlier podcast that Janet Yellen was Biden's choice for Treasury Secretary. But Kim, who else has made the list? And what do you make of the team that he's assembling?
Well, what we have are a lot of people who had spent time in Barack Obama's administration, some of them in the original Clinton administration. So in addition to Ms. Yellen, you've got Jared Bernstein, who was the architect of that infamous Obama stimulus. He was the guy who promised that if we did all that Keynesian spending, that it would keep unemployment below 8% and drop it below 7% by the autumn of 2010. Did not work out that way. Jobless rate hit 10% in October of 2009, stayed high through April 2010. Didn't get to the number he predicted until 2013. So that's him. And he's going to be going to the White House Council on Economic Advisors. The head of that is going to be a Princeton economist by the name of Cecilia Rouse. She was also a veteran of both the Clinton and the Obama White Houses. And then you have Brian Deese, another Obama veteran. And he was the guy behind that infamous 2009 auto bailout. He's going to be the head of the National Economic Council. And then the most controversial one, without a doubt, is Neera Tanden. She is a longtime Clinton-Hillary Clinton partisan. She has most recently been running the Center for American Progress, but she has managed the rare feat of offending both most Republicans in Congress with a series over the years of acerbic tweets, but also a lot of progressives in her party. In particular, she was very, very tough on Bernie Sanders, in particular when he was running against Hillary Clinton. And her shop has continued to be critical of him. And so there's a lot of progressives who don't like her. Overall, what you've got here is a team that's not only just a holdover from the Obama time, but people who uniformly love more regulation, higher taxes, and a lot easier money and a lot more spending. So I don't think that we should expect great things from them. And the thing that worries me most is, with an economy that's currently recovering faster than most have predicted, the field is wide open for them to mess it up.
On that point, I mean, there were a couple lines from Biden's speech that stuck out to me. And one of them was when he said this, he said, quote, we're going to get this economy moving again. And I mean, the economy was moving pretty well before the virus hit. And when I think about the Biden campaign agenda, and granted, you know, campaign platforms don't always get translated into policy, but Joe Biden was talking about raising taxes on businesses, raising taxes on investment gains, raising taxes on the payrolls of companies that employ high earners. And Bill, I mean, none of that makes me think boom times ahead.
You know, I think you're exactly right. Like, the best you can say about Joe Biden is that some of his things are contradictory. You know, he says one thing one place and another in another place. But the big two points that you make, and I think Kim alludes to this, is Joe Biden's platform has a lot of spending in it. Huge amounts of spending. And he said he wanted to reverse the Trump tax cuts from day one. I think they'll also be looking to reverse a lot of the deregulation, which in my mind has been as important a contributor to the growth that we did see as the tax cuts. And, you know, elections have consequences. And I think they have the team that he's put together is very interventionist. And also a lot of them have experience in the Obama years, you know, under a very slow growing economy.
The other line that jumped out, at least to me, from Biden was he was citing an old saying from his dad. And his dad apparently used to tell him, "Joey, I don't expect the government to solve my problems, but I do expect them to understand my problems." And then he said, "This team understands." So, Kim, this will be a Treasury Department that cares about you.
Yeah. Look, the weird thing about that is that it's so at odds with what we actually do know about these people. I mean, and I'm not in any way being critical of them given their life or their success. But a lot of these folks are policy obsessives who care about a lot of things that, in fact, most Americans rank at the bottom of their priorities. You know, I'll give you a good example. The guy, Brian Deese, who I mentioned, who is going to go over and run the National Economic Council, you know, when he got out of the Obama administration, he went to go work for BlackRock. And there he is the global head for sustainable investing. In essence, he's got a big focus on climate policy. And this is in keeping with Mr. Biden's stated aim of making climate an economic priority and even a national security priority. But it's not necessarily something that most Americans went out and voted for this time. In fact, if you look at polls, most American put that at the very bottom of most of the things that were on their mind. Neera Tanden, the other one, the one that said cap, she is also a bit of a climate obsessive. She has supported over the years proposals for trillions of dollars in federal spending to deal with climate, economy-wide prices on carbon, mandatory emissions reductions. And I think when you have these folks coupled with named appointments like John Kerry, who's going to have the portfolio dealing with climate in the White House, it's very concerning about what they are indeed focused on and what that might do to the economy in ways that will hurt Americans in the ways that they're worried about.
And Neera Tanden is the name that seems to be drawing the most fire so far from Republicans. And Kim mentioned her tweets is a lot of what's being objected to. So Texas Senator John Cornyn cited combative and insulting comments about many members of the Senate, mainly on our side of the aisle, that he says Tanden made. You can find examples of her, for example, calling Mitch McConnell Voldemort or Moscow Mitch. And Bill, there's some reporting now, a headline in the New York Post that says that recently Tanden appears to have deleted about 1,000 tweets.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, look, she's very outspoken, as we've seen. I think she also criticized Michelle Obama when Michelle Obama said, "When they go low, we go high," saying it doesn't work. You know, in other words, advocating going low. I believe she also has problems. The interesting thing about her is a lot of the Republicans are very upset by her appointment. But I believe Bernie Sanders and his wing are not very happy with her either. So this is going to be a very interesting fight. Yeah, I'm surprised that Joe Biden, most of the other people that he's picked, you know, have been kind of establishment acceptable and not as outspoken. They may agree with her on things, but they haven't quite put it the way she's put it. I'm quite surprised that a man that says we need to come together would pick someone so inherently divisive as one of his early appointments. So it's going to make for an interesting fight. And the danger when you do that is, when you kind of pick a fight or you provoke a fight, then you make it easier for Republicans to fight on other individuals. So I'm very surprised by this choice.
Hang tight. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Plus, save time by completing security questionnaires with Vanta AI. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ. That's VANTA.com/WSJ.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. So Bill is suggesting that he's surprised by this choice, choosing someone this divisive for a high profile role. And I mean, one theory there is it was floated by an advisor to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who referred to Tandon's nomination as, quote, a sacrifice to the confirmation gods, unquote. The theory there, I think, being that if Tandon gets torpedoed by the Republican Senate, then other nominees will have an easier time. Is there anything to that, you think, Kim?
Well, I suppose you could be really cynical and believe that the entirety of Team Biden had these secret conversations and teed this woman up for failure. I think it's more likely she's a very prominent figure in Democratic circles. She holds a very prominent role. She was there during all of the Clinton campaign, and it was probably seen as a way to further unify the Democratic Party by bringing in folks from all the different camps. This was probably more a question of just bad judgment, because anyone who has really watched Mrs. Tandon knows that she is toxic for Republicans. And maybe the problem here is that if you're in Democratic circles, you actually cheer the horrible things that she says about the opposition without really stopping to think about the fact that you need those opponents to get her through. And look, the real problem, and I would just point this out, is you're likely to have a number of Republicans, moderate Republicans, who, out of deference to Joe Biden and the notion that he should get to pick who he wants, will be likely to vote for her anyway. So the real issue is actually Democrats who would not vote for her. And, you know, Bill touched on that. The real issue here is the bad blood between her and progressives. She is an absolute Clinton loyalist. She was brutal to Bernie Sanders and his crowd the last time around. She did not cease doing that during this election when Joe Biden was running. Her outfit, you may remember, was the creator of that funny video lampooning Bernie Sanders for becoming one of the millionaires that he derided. And he was very offended by this. So you'd have progressive senators that you'd have a hard time pulling over to her side.
That's a good point. And I have not seen the Biden camp pushing back on the left yet, but they are definitely starting to push back on the right. And their argument essentially is, you know, you're not going to confirm this accomplished woman to this this role simply because of some mean tweets. And here's what Joe Biden recently said, Bill. He said that disqualifies almost every Republican senator and 90% of the administration.
Yeah, although I think if you read her tweets, they are a cut above in terms of some of the nastiness and so forth. And in any case, it doesn't matter. Senators can do what they want. They can vote or not. Joe Biden has to persuade them. And remember, this is the man that was hailed as Abraham Lincoln for calling a very divided country to come together. I don't see how this advances it. In fact, it will make a lot of these Republicans more cynical. Joe Biden, as president, will have to persuade Republicans to give him the votes, you know, for his cabinet, and they can give them or withhold them as they please. I think a president has the presumptive right to choose his own advisors, you know, and not have the Senate choose it for him. But in some cases, if it pushes too far, and clearly a lot of Republican senators feel that way. And I say what's interesting is the Bernie wing's not that happy with her either. And I would just be very curious to see if they just sit idly by or they make their own statements. It'd be very interesting if Joe Biden can call on Bernie and the others to support her.
Another argument that Joe Biden made Tuesday while rolling out his team is that it's time to get those negotiations finalized for another COVID bill. Here's what Biden said. He said, right now, the full Congress should come together and pass a robust package for relief, which is a little bit different than Mitch McConnell's line, though he's pulling in the same direction, clearly. I mean, what he's saying is one thing we agree on, as I've said, is waiting for next year is not an answer. We need a targeted relief bill, including things we agree on. So the debate in Congress, Kim, it seems to me, is over the difference between robust and targeted.
Well, this is what it has been for quite a while, in fact. And we saw, you know, movement this week. I think one of the reasons that you're now actually seeing a little bit more momentum is that there was a quote, bipartisan, end quote, group of House and Senate lawmakers who got together and said they were going to come up with their own bill and did reveal this $908 billion framework that includes a whole lot of things. But I think the price tag was still just too big. And so that has inspired Mitch McConnell to go back yet again to find something that the White House was willing to sign off on. And he has now been circulating yet another proposal with Republican senators. He unveiled it on Tuesday. And it is, again, around more like $500 billion. It also includes some offsets, for instance, by repurposing some of the past money that has not been spent. You know, it mostly directs money at small businesses, a bit of money to the Paycheck Protection Program, some more money for schools. The big sticking point here between $500 billion and, you know, a trillion, which is more what Nancy Pelosi wants, has always been this one issue of whether or not you're going to hand a bunch of dollars to state and local governments to dig themselves out of self-created holes. And she has remained stuck on that. These bipartisan senators had some money in there for that. The McConnell bill does not. And that reflects the fact that the vast majority of his caucus does not on principle want to see that happen. So it's now ball over to Nancy Pelosi. She's feeling a lot of heat from her moderate members. People want to see something get done, but she may not want to cave on this, in particular right before she goes in for her speaker election.
And another interesting wrinkle is simply the timing. We're getting to the year end now, and McConnell was suggesting that any COVID deal that was negotiated now would probably just be tacked on to the year end spending bill that Congress is going to be working up. And Bill, I wonder if that changes the dynamic at all, simply because it increases the sticker shock that some of these Republican senators would be voting for if they were passing it.
Yeah, I think it does. Look, I've been very dubious about it. I mean, the main thing that I'm dubious about, I think I share this with the senators, is the aid to the states, which seems to me, as opposed to paycheck protection or something, aiding these states is basically bailing out these states that have made disastrous decisions on spending themselves, whether it's California or Illinois. And I think that's going to be a longer term issue with the Biden administration, that a lot of these Democratic states and Democratic governors and Democratic legislatures are going to be looking to the federal government to bail them out. I think this is just one of those fights.
Finally, Attorney General Bill Barr has disclosed in a letter to Congress that he has earlier this year that he appointed U.S. Attorney John Durham as a special counsel to investigate the FBI's behavior during the 2016 election. Kim, what is the significance of this change in appointment?
Well, it was clearly designed to protect or give John Durham some greater assurance that he will not be unceremoniously fired by a Biden attorney general, because there's a lot of pressure on Biden to shut that inquiry down. Democrats were caught being prime movers in this FBI investigation because of their role with the dossier that they funneled to the FBI. There's a lot of reputations that could be hurt, or at least a lot of red faces that could be there when Durham actually puts out his report. Democrats would rather this all go away. So when you give someone special counsel status, it under the Department of Justice guidelines, it means that they have independence on day-to-day work that they do. And also they cannot be fired other than in circumstances where they've been proven to have somehow exceeded their authority or acted inappropriately. It's very difficult. It's much harder to get rid of them. Of course, that was exactly why Democrats demanded a special counsel in Bob Mueller. They argued that you had to have someone in that position to protect him from White House interference or from getting fired. And so that was Bill Barr's argument, is John Durham, now the tables are turning. Now you're going to have a Democratic White House that doesn't want this probe, and he needs the same kind of protections. Now, I have to say, I don't like special counsels one way or the other. I just think they're bad positions to have, and they usually abuse their power. But in Durham's case, he has shown no predilection to exceeding his mandate. He's acted professionally and responsibly. And you can make the case that this really was the only path for accountability, because there isn't going to be any more, you know, a Biden administration isn't going to voluntarily provide any information, and it's likely to stonewall any further congressional investigations.
Well, a lot there, but let me start with this. There's one line in the letter from Bill Barr that stuck out to me, at least, and here's what he writes. He says, although I had expected Mr. Durham to complete his work by the summer of 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as additional information he uncovered, prevented him from doing so, unquote. And Bill, obviously, there's no way to know what additional information that might be, but it certainly leads one to wonder.
Yeah, I mean, what the Attorney General says parallels what I'm hearing from other sources about what they found and the difficulties they had, you know, with grand juries and so forth. I'm a huge admirer of Bill Barr, but I have to confess I'm a little torn on the special counsel part. I am so distrustful of special counsels. And I think one of the problems we have is that the right tends to like them if they're going after Democrats, and the left tends to like them if they're going after Republicans. I realize that naming Mr. Durham a special counsel will make it harder for the Biden administration to fire him. But and if we want any accountability, that may be the price. But it does trouble me that we're going to once again rely on a special counsel, when I think what we really need to do is not only uncover what happened, but get our country back to ruling normally. I would say this the same thing for the IG. I think inspectors general are constitutionally dubious. And the fact that we had a year and a half or so, maybe more, for an IG, chewed up a lot of time. I just think we should go back to the normal sources of enforcing accountability, the Department of Justice and the United States Congress. And instead, we seem to defer to all these all these other kind of things. So I have a very mixed response, because I really loathe the idea of a special counsel, though it's technically okay now because he technically reports to the Attorney General. In practice, they really become independent entities, and that's very troubling to me.
All right. Well, thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later this week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.